Welcome to Juno Afternoon. It's August 25th. I'm Andy Klein. I'm your host for today. And coming up, ducks and birds and pinballs and skates. It's all ahead this week, and we're going to tell you all about it. Glacier Valley Rotary has their $10,000 duck derby happening tomorrow, and they'll be here to tell you how to be a part of it. An honest-to-God pinball wizard is going to be here today. There's an internationally sanctioned pinball tournament next week at the Crystal Saloon, and you're definitely going to want to know about that. The fall migration is on for birds in North America, and we have a front row seat to it here in Southeast Alaska. We're going to be talking to the Audubon Society, and one of the legends of figure skating is going to be in Juneau soon. We'll hear why Scott Hamilton will be here and other great stuff happening over at the Treadwell Arena from CBJ's Parks and Rec. That's all ahead. I hope you'll stay with us. Hey, happening coming up in the weekend weather, first and foremost, it is happening again. Another beautiful weekend is on tap. Partly sunny skies predicted through Tuesday before some showers can start maybe on Wednesday later in the week. Highs this weekend predicted to be in the low 70s with light winds. Going to be gorgeous out there.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years. With cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juneau. More at heritagecoffee.com.
KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Akwan. The Clean AD have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the Tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these Tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds, and to gatherings in other villages, and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations.
Hansen Gress, Ka eat with the shoe ye, we kashuk are ye tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta kanakaya ha ani kak gunish cheese.
It's Juno Afternoon from your community-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm Andy Klein with you. Well, the $10,000 Duck Derby is happening tomorrow, and we've got Glacier Valley Rotary folks here. Michelle Strickler is here, the committee chair, and also Eric Forst, who's the Glacier Valley Rotary president this year.
I am.
Congratulations
Thank
on
you.
That esteemed honor.
Yes, it's
and,
my second time around.
That's cool. Well, this is always a super fun annual event, right? It's actually almost become like the symbol of Glacier Valley Rotary. I might know the guy that's in the duck, you know, duck outfit.
That's right. Well, and it's great because this year is the first time in like 4 years we've been able to have the full event at the park with the dropping of the ducks, because of course during the pandemic we couldn't do that. We did it a different way, but now we're back on full tilt. We're gonna have a huge event there at the park tomorrow.
It's gonna be beautiful.
The sun is supposed to come out. Cross your fingers, everybody. We're gonna have food, we're gonna have games, we're gonna have entertainment. There's gonna be all kinds of fun stuff. Some other organizations are gonna be there doing some stuff.
Michelle, now is there still time?
There is.
To get a duck?
Yes, we actually just finished our final duck donuts for ducks this morning.
Okay.
So that's done. But this year you can get the tickets online at junoduckderby.com. And because we're doing the event in person, you can still purchase ducks at the event tomorrow morning up until 1 p.m.
Okay.
That's the cutoff.
Now,
you got to have your duck in the pot by 1 p.m.
And so, now part of this, of course, is the spectacle.
Right.
It's amazing.
Right.
All the ducks. But let's talk cash. Let's talk these prizes. It's kind of amazing what you guys have put together.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Someone's going to go home with $5,000
cash. It's going to be incredible, huh?
Yes, yeah, that's $5,000
cash.
And it's called the $10,000 Duck Derby for a reason. The prizes just keep going. Second prize, round trip tickets on Alaska Airlines, anywhere they fly. We love that.
And $1,000 cash to go with it.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. So you get a vacation and some spending money mm-hmm. for second place.
And I like how there's prizes all the way down through 10th, like this, you know, down in that participation trophy level,
right?
You're still getting cash.
Yeah.
Yep.
And not only
it.
That, if you go to the event tomorrow, if you're actually at the mm-hmm. event, you don't have to be there to win. But if you do go to the event tomorrow, we have lots of door prizes,
too. Oh, cool.
All right. Lots of door prizes are going to be given away. It's going to be a great time. I'm really excited about it.
And the door prizes are amazing. Some of the door prizes are worth as much as the prizes. So you don't want to miss these chances at Wings Airways doing some Taku Lodge flights. We've got some, cash prizes from some of our different sponsors.
I mean, I know like Temsco's involved, right? Yes. I'm guessing there must be a ride on those kinds of things. Like
Red Dog Saloon might have some apparel or some bags stuck there.
Very generous.
And we're going to start with the door prizes at 11:15. So all of the festivities kick up around 11 o'clock and keep on going. About every 15 minutes, we'll pull another prize or two. So you just need to be present. Grab a raffle ticket, show up at the park, maybe buy some more ducks and have some fun.
Do you guys know how many years has this been going?
15 years. And this is something I'm really excited about. And I'm actually a co-chair. So shout out to my partner in crime, Charlene Morrison. Okay. Together, this is our first year co-chairing this event. So we're really having fun with it. It's a lot of work, but it's been great. 15 years for Glacier Valley Rotary. And this year, I think we're going to cross the $500,000 mark for donations back to the community.
Wow.
Because every duck we sell goes back into the community through
those
scholarships.
Those little rubber ducks make a difference.
Oh, and the reason we can do that, the reason 100% of those money raised goes back in the community is because of our sponsors. The sponsors cover the cost of putting on the event. So everything we raise goes to the club. We get to use it for all of our great projects like Youth Exchange. We have a huge Youth Exchange program. We send our kids from Juneau overseas to live in a country for another year, and we take a kid from another country and they live in Juneau for a year.
I think a lot of people know Rotary because of that exchange program. That's like a real identifier of one of the big benefits
Rotary has. It's an amazing program. Yeah. And they're going to, just real quick, the high schools will be having recruiting sessions in the next few weeks at both high schools. So if you've got a freshman or sophomore that's interested, talk to your counselor, ask about Rotary Youth Exchange. It's a great program.
Yeah,
so
really
that's a big
cool
thing we do.
And then the park, right?
Rotary Park in the Valley is our Rotary Club's park. We take care of that park. We add things to it. We work with the city. We put in a brand new, beautiful, big shelter a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And that's all there. And it's beautiful. And then we also, this year, one of our projects is to equip that shelter with brand new picnic tables. Really nice, ADA accessible picnic tables, which is going to be a great addition out there. So,
yeah, really cool.
And we also do the 9/11 memorial out there, which is real close to everybody's heart in our club. And we're going to have our annual ceremony out there on 9/11. So you can come out to that. We do a huge scholarship program for high school
the scholarships
students.
Was the other thing.
We
I was
give
gonna,
away cash to a lot of students at both high schools.
Makes a
and
huge difference for a lot of, there's a lot of kids out there that's made a huge difference in their lives to have that little seed money, you know, to
and
go
they,
towards
and
it.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but it's 3 years they get the scholarship, I believe. It's rotating somehow.
I'm trying to remember. I was president a few years ago and had the honor of awarding those scholarships. And these kids are pretty amazing. We get to read their applications. And it reminds us the good work our school system is doing and our families are doing raising these kids in Juneau. I want to give a shout out to Thunder Mountain High School Interact. And I think Juneau Douglas High School is starting a new Interact club. Interact is like our little brothers and sisters. They're also Rotarians as far as we're concerned. And the Interact club will be out at the park tomorrow doing a fun little bake sale. So we're going to support them. They always come out to our projects.
It's really cool to just instill in people at a younger age, like giving back to your community, right? It's just such a basic thing a lot of us take for granted, maybe, but it's not something that people, if you don't have that, you know, if it's not instilled in you early, you know, you just don't necessarily get that in your life. And it builds your life out so much, you know, as well as benefiting everyone.
Every year
else.
We have these high school kids come out to one of our meetings usually and run one of our meetings. And it is a riot just to see their energy and their excitement and their belief that they can change their community and their world. Reminds us.
Do they do more fines or less?
Oh, they go nuts the fines.
Yeah, they take advantage of
they
the fines.
Love that.
Full tilt.
That was my guess.
As a matter of fact, tomorrow at the bake sale, our newest exchange student from Switzerland, Ronya, will be there as part of the Interact Club from Thunder Mountain High School.
Oh, very
so
cool.
You can come talk to her about youth exchange if you want, and you get all kinds of information. There'll be tons of Rotarians there in their blue vests.
Now, can
and
we talk
answer
about,
any questions?
I wonder, how does it work?
You how drop does it actually
the,
happen?
They drop the ducks in, and then what?
So, again, because of our sponsors, one of them who is Coastal Helicopters, they donate the helicopter.
Hovers over Twin Lakes.
They come pick up all the ducks in a big net.
No.
Pick them in a big net, hoist them way up in the air over Twin Lakes. And then we count them down and they yank the chain and all the net opens up and all the thousands of ducks drop into the lake.
In theory.
Of course, it's going to work perfectly.
The theatrics of this is
exactly,
amazing.
There's quite a bit of suspense because there have been days when the ducks had to be dipped in the lake or they've dribbled across the lake and kids are running along the edge going, there's a duck. And we can't do anything until all the ducks are within the boom.
I have every confidence that all the ducks are going to drop perfectly tomorrow.
But it will be entertaining.
Low wind. Yeah. It's low wind tomorrow, too. Yep. So that's good.
It should be nice.
Necessary.
And again, all of our sponsors are what makes this happen. I'm going to rattle them off really fast. Alaska Airlines, Juno Radio Center, LG Rayfield, Holt Chiropractic, Gas and Go, Southeast Alaska Real Estate, Alaska Marine Lines, Gold Belt, Holland America, Princess Cruises, True North Federal Credit Union, Valley Paint Center, Solarad LLC, State Farm, both of them, Robin Lotus, Amelia Hayward, Juno Empire, Coastal Helicopters, Temsco Helicopters, Wings Airways, and Bartlett Regional Hospital. So those are all local operations that really help out the Rotary Club and make sure we have a very fantastic community event. So I want to thank all those. And if you deal with any of those companies, thank them for supporting the Rotary Club. We appreciate that.
All right. So it's happening tomorrow. Number one, let's run it down. It's $5,000 for the grand prize. Does that mean you just pick out the lucky duck?
The way it goes is, this is so cool, and we didn't mention it. The One People Canoe Society will be there in their beautiful canoe, giving canoe rides starting early, but by 11 when things kick off. And when it's time to rescue ducks, they'll go out there in that boom, and we have a special net that starts selecting 10th prize first, 9, 8 to first prize.
All right.
And
so
it goes
one
quick
at a time, and they bring them in, and we call out the number. We match the name. We're like, this is who the winner is.
And anyone listening, you can go to JunoDuckDerby.com and get your duck right now. If you've got some commitment tomorrow, you do not need to be present to win. We are very good at finding
our
winners.
Get out there and do it.
Should.
And
thank you.
They're only $10. They're only $10. So you can get one duck, and you could win $5,000. So one duck is $10. You get three for $25. If you get $100, you get 13. So if you buy more, you get free ducks. So there's the incentive there too. But we have a price level for everybody. And again, you can do it online at JunoDuckDerby.com. You can also come to the event tomorrow and purchase as many as you want.
Is there a limited amount of ducks?
No limit.
Okay.
We have, through the magic of Rotary, we will meet the demand.
I see. All right.
But we do believe that we're well positioned to handle the demand tomorrow. We've got a great team of salesmen. They'll be on site and lots of fun games for the kids and families.
I was thinking in terms of like a raffle, it's probably pretty good odds that you're going to win something. There's 10 really big prizes.
Exactly.
Plus lots of other cool stuff.
And if you buy three or five or 10, you're going to have a lot better odds. So,
well, it's going to be awesome, you guys. It's going to be nice weather. So it's happening tomorrow, Twin Lakes, 11 a.m. is when it all starts. You can also watch it live on Facebook.
That's true.
If you're remote and can't get there. It's JunoDuckDerby.com. That's where you can still go and get the winning duck. I believe someone listening to this show right now is going to go and get the winning duck.
And
my belief.
We have had winners that have won with one duck.
That's right.
They bought one $10 duck and they won a big prize.
That's
so
all you need.
You can't win if you don't play, right? So you got to get in there and get your ducks before tomorrow at 1 p.m.
Ducks start at $10 and you can buy more ducks as you go. And as you buy more ducks, they get cheaper per duck. So that's really awesome. The grand prize again is $5,000. There's airline tickets and there's prizes all the way going through 10th place and plus door prizes and stuff like that. Go in person. It's going to be a blast. Michelle and Eric, thanks so much for coming in. And Glacier Valley Rotary Club putting on the $10,000 Duck Derby. It's happening tomorrow at 11. Go check it out. It's going to be great.
Thanks,
you guys,
Andy,
are going to have a great time.
We'll see you tomorrow,
right,
Juno.
Sounds
thanks.
Great. Listening to Juno Afternoon here from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Andy Klein. Yeah, Pinball Wizard, we have one in the studio with. I know, David, you might not consider yourself a true wizard, but I've seen you play. It's pretty impressive.
I suppose the term Pinball Wizard is almost a little, what's the word, not cliche, but passe for people who play a lot. We hear it so much.
What is it now? Is there some other grand, amazing?
No, I think everyone just wants to be really grumpy about it.
And right, not
be mad about the one thing people bring up when you play pinball.
Oh, that's right. Well, let's talk about it. It's pinball happening at the Crystal Saloon. It's the Pin Brawl, and it's coming up this Tuesday at 7 p.m. I saw this was an IFPA certified event. What is IFPA? I'm International Federation of Pinball.
International Flipper Pinball Association.
Flipper Pinball.
I don't understand it. I'll be honest with you.
Is there another kind of pinball?
No.
Yeah, they all have flippers.
No, I assume it's just pachinko at that
point, right? Yeah, right. It's either pinball
or pachinko. Back in the day, the pinball term came from the games in the I would be totally misquoting the time, but I want to say around the 20s, the original games just had pins in them, and then you shot a ball up.
Oh,
and it would bounce around, and you would try to get it in a hole or something like that to get points, and could jostle the game a little bit to get it in there. There was no flippers on the original one, so I suppose
maybe
some form of pinball.
It was the new technology. Yeah. They wanted to separate themselves from the old school, so they were the flip. Do you know how long is that an organization that's been around for decades and decades?
No, I don't know about decades and decades. There used to be the Professional and Amateur Pinball Association, and I believe that ran in concert with the IFPA, and PAPA is gone now, and IFPA is
cool.
The governing body across the world.
And are there events happening all over the place
all
every
over the
week?
World. You know, everywhere.
Yeah, right.
Everywhere
right.
across the world.
And
from
then is there
New Zealand?
Are there a certain few grand tournaments that happen?
There are. Yeah. So there's.
What are the ones? Yeah.
The two biggest ones are the two world championships. There's an Open World Championship that takes place every year in Southern California, and then there's an Invitational one that's rotates. That's been in Europe the last few years. I haven't gotten to that one. Someday.
Yeah.
I'll get invited to that. But I've played in a few of the open ones, and it's really, really, I think one of the great things about pinball is if it's something that you get into and it's accessible now at a local level, and it's not far from where we are to go play in Seattle, where you're going to see, I think Seattle has more top 100 players than any city in the world. I want to check that. But for a while it was that way. To going to a place like if you go to the open, and seeing these players, it's accessible. If you play golf, and even if you become a really good golfer or even a pool player, I see great pool players in Juneau all the time, and I know they're good.
Yeah.
But they might not be playing against that top tier, like the Jeanette Lees or whoever's these hot pool players at the time. You probably not see them. But if you go to a major, the next major is in Seattle. I'm going down there September 8th. You're going to see the top 3, 5, 10 players in the world.
Who are those guys? Who are they?
They're all under 21 right now. It's so crazy.
Wow.
It's so crazy. Jason Zoller and Escher Leshkoff and Johannes Ostermeyer. And these kids are
and
all
from
young.
Across the globe.
Across the globe. Yeah.
Is there a stronghold of pinball? I mean, is America the hottest spot for pinball, or is there some country that's like up and coming or
there's
is known?
A few.
Yeah.
Germany, Sweden are definitely the big two right now. New Zealand has a lot of kids coming out of there. So a lot of those Northwestern European countries for sure. And then in the States, Chicago, San Francisco, which is the pinball machine I came out of, was that big San Francisco machine. Portland and Seattle, those are the real big ones.
Oh, that's interesting.
And then right now, Wisconsin, but these people in Wisconsin have figured out a way to game the system a little bit too. So
that's what I was just going to say is that it's interesting. To me, pinball is such a cool thing because, you know, there's no cheat codes, or at least I don't know of how you could do it. It's an analog game in a way, right? Nope. I mean, there's some digital stuff and there's cool effects, but really it's about how that ball bounces around and it's about how fast you are on the flippers. And it's very much just you. So it feels different, much different than playing a video game where there can be patterns and there can be ways of doing, you know, video games. And there's that sort of element that happens for competitive video games.
Absolutely.
And that, as you said, like that's part of that's really cool because, you know, I think we've all had this experience where like I'll have a great ball. I mean, it'll be amazing. Yeah. And all of a sudden Iron Maiden's like, you know, singing out to me and it's like the best feeling. And then great players will sometimes they'll just roll right down the middle and it's just the end of it, you know, and it's kind of that element to pinball. Tell me, what is it about pinball that you love or that keeps you sort of so motivated about it?
I think the main thing the game is great. And like you're saying, there's no amount of programming that's going to change the way a pinball bounces. Or I can buy 5 Iron Maiden games and line them all up and they're all going to play completely differently. They're going to wear different. They're going to move this way. There's a little piece of dirt here and there. I think that's great. I love the challenge of trying to figure out at this rate thousands of pinball games. But more for me, it's the social aspect of it. It's not something you typically just do at home. I mean, there's plenty of people with these great home collections, but by and large, you're going to a bar or an arcade to play.
It's a social situation. Yeah, definitely. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you can't play online with someone else.
You got to be, you know, right?
You got to be there. So let me think. Let me see if I can remember the ones you've got there at the Crystal Saloon. So you've got Terminator, Jurassic Park, Iron Maiden. You got Hulk. You got Rachel McLish. I love the Rachel McLish.
You got her name, too.
I love the Rachel McLish. That's my era, man. I know Rachel McLish. And then there's one other that I'm not remembering, I think.
The Mandalorian.
Mandalorian. Yes, that's right. The Mandalorian. I love the Iron Maiden one. That happens to be my favorite. I love that one.
That's my favorite.
Do you have a favorite one that you'd love to have or get? Or is there like a holy grail couple of pinball machines that you'd love to see?
I'd probably break it down by era at that point. An older game, this is 8-Ball Deluxe. It was my favorite game for a long time. Also, one of my best friends' nicknames, Nate Ball Deluxe. we tragically lost Nate Ball, unfortunately. Okay. So... But for a lot of reasons, I love the game and just the reminder of one of my best friends.
That's cool. Yeah.
So for older games, newer games, Tron.
Oh, yeah.
From 2010. And if you go to Sitka, which may or may not be the location of the state tournament this year, that may or may not be an announcement.
Oh, okay.
But if you go to Sitka to the Coliseum Theater, Scott, the owner there, has this incredible collection of pinball machines. And he has the limited edition version of my favorite game, which is really, really rare. And it has the Daft Punk music in it. And those games I've seen them go for over $20,000.
That's cool.
There is one in Southeast Alaska. Wow. I haven't gotten to play it myself yet, but I know it's there.
That's really cool.
And
yeah.
So I'm really looking forward to going down there and seeing that.
I can remember ones of my youth. I remember so distinctly. And it's just amazing how that artwork feeds into your enjoyment of the game itself. Like, you know, how cool it looks. And then that's part of it. And then sometimes there's games where you may not even be identifying with the artwork that well, but the action of it is so great, or the sound effects or whatever are so great, you know, like the Addams Family one. I love that one. It's so fun, good. You know? Yeah. So right. Good. Right.
That's what got me in. When we moved to Juneau, my dad worked at Bullwinkle's, and it's about the time they must've had the Addams Family game there. And I would hang out after work with him. I played Street Fighter 2 growing up. When we moved up here, I came up from San Francisco. That's what I did with all of my time. But I would watch him and his friends do that. And it was the first time, and I know there's camera here and we're on radio. So I watched somebody do a post pass, which is where this camera here, he had the ball caught right here and flipped it up off of the post and caught it on this flipper. So it just pops over like that. The first time I'd ever seen that done, and I was hooked. I was like, this is my game forever now.
Wow, that's cool.
But Addams Family was great. I think there's a saying in pinball that the worst movies make the best games. Congo, Demolition Man, Barbed Wire, like great pinball. Great. Shadow. Shadow's like one of the greatest pinball games ever. Terrible movies, but great games.
That's funny. I love it. Well, let's talk about the tournament itself. How's it going to run? And people show up. It happens Tuesday at 7:00. It's $5 to register. But like, tell me, how do people find out about it?
Absolutely. I don't have an actual website, but we have Juno Pinball on Facebook and Instagram. We have a group on Facebook called Juno Pinballers. And I also announce everything through the Crystal Saloon or the Bearcade Instagrams and Facebook. How it works. Yeah. So we'll start registration about 7:00. It's a $5 entry. $1 of that money goes for each player goes to the IFPA. That money goes into a reserve that gets saved for the state tournament. The rest goes into a prize pool. And we split that up 40% for the winner, 30% second, 20-10 down to fourth.
And do you play each table or how does that go?
Mm-hmm. You hopefully will. I'd leave that up to the software, which people get sometimes upset about. I have to play Terminator 3 times.
Like, oh, so there's software. So you download kind of an app, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Yeah, I've done that actually. Yeah, at the Crystal. Mm-hmm. So you download the IFPA app.
We have a separate software we use called Match Play for that. It's mostly for my end as the tournament director. You can certainly, as a player, it's good to have on there so you can see what game you're on. But the way it would work, the way it's typically worked, if we have less than 16 players, which we usually hover around there, is we do strikes. So you'll get assigned to a group of four players in a game. You have 9 strikes. And in that group, if you finish fourth, you get 3 strikes. Third is second. Second is one. First place in that group gets no strikes. And you just go through the tournament until there's only one person left.
I see. Okay. All right. And how many strikes are you out?
Nine.
Nine strikes and you're out. Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay, cool. How long does it usually take? Just a couple hours?
Two,
or
yeah. Two and a half, yeah, two and right. a half hours.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, it sounds like a blast. I love the idea of like not just playing, but also getting together with people, being able to compare like styles and watch some of the better players. And like you say, learn techniques or figure out. When I watch my friends who are better players than me, like I realize, oh, they're paying attention to what the target is, you know, like like I just tend to just keep the flippers going, you know, but like I have a couple of friends who are like, oh, no, hit that one. That's going to be, you know, that's going to get you to the next level right now. Like that's kind of like this, you know, there's these little levels within the game of, you know, understanding what to do and how to be a better player. You know?
I'm hoping next year to bring some. I did a couple of pinball 101 classes this year at the Crystal Saloon. I'm hoping to bring those back. We'll probably wait until this tournament season's. Ooh, excuse
That's
me.
All right.
I'll probably wait till this tournament season's over to do that again. So we'll probably fire that up in the winter. But I'm always there if someone's interested. I'm not very hard to find.
Do you have tips? Just like some basics,
yeah.
Tips for people. I want to go in and just become a decent player. What are some of the tips you'd give?
The first thing, if you've even never walked up, is don't hit both flippers at the same time when you're only. Just trying to hit the ball. You don't want to be having them both go up at the same time. It's better to have one down for defense. Like, don't randomly doing that.
That's a great tip.
That's the first thing I try to teach anybody who's just walking up.
Independent flippers, not the same time. Okay.
You don't punch somebody with two hands.
Yes.
You always leave one up for defense.
Right.
It's the same
idea.
It's the exact same idea.
Okay.
It's the same idea. After that, like that's just the go have fun.
Yeah.
We start to teach what's called a dead bounce, which I think what a lot of players get caught up in is the ball's coming really fast and then they just want to hit it and send it right back up. In reality, it's a lot better to try to bring that ball under control. The easiest way to do it is to, and it's counterintuitive for people, but to not flip. Let it just bounce off of your flipper. The angle of that flipper is going to send it right back over to your other flipper and take all of that inertia and that velocity off.
That's nerve-wracking, though.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Just coming in. Right.
I spend half of the class that I was teaching just like loading the games up with credits. Me like, do not flip.
Don't flip.
Do not flip. Watch the ball bounce.
Yeah.
That's kind of, I think, for what a skateboarder, when they learn how to ollie, that first moment for them, that's a first big moment for a lot of pinball players
right.
is when they get that down really effectively.
Yeah.
So not flipping both at the same time and then learning when not to flip.
That's good. Okay. Well, those are great tips. So, if you head over to Crystal Saloon Tuesday around 7, that's a great one for the Pin Brawl. It's a $5 registration. People get there maybe a little early in order to register and stuff.
The registration starts at 7 because we know people in Juneau like to be late for things. I try to get it going at 7:30. The really cool part right now is there's plenty of time to qualify for the state tournament in January right now. If you were to continue to show up, if that's something that becomes interesting to you through any of your process and progress through pinball, we'll still have a path to do that.
Yeah.
Which would be really fun.
Well, that's cool. Well, David Elrod, thanks so much for coming in. David's from the Crystal Saloon, and the Pin Brawl is going to be happening this Tuesday, 7 p.m. It's a $5 registration, and it gets you on the road to becoming a tournament pro.
Yes, sir.
This could be the start.
You'll get your ranking number right away.
And there's no age limit. There's all that. Well, there's an age limit. You can't go into the bar.
Gotta be 21 over right now.
But you can be 65, 75, whatever, man. You can do it, right?
Absolutely. So, everybody can play.
Everyone can play pinball. Well, thanks so much, Dave. Really, really great to talk to you about it.
Thanks, man, for having me.
Okay. Elton John there doing Pinball Wizard as well. Well, welcome back to your community-supported public media station, KTOO. This is Juneau Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein, and the fall migration is ahead. And Brenda Wright is here from the Juneau Audubon. How you doing, Brenda? Good to see you.
Yeah, it's great to have another nice day like this.
It's so great. With weather like this in general for birds, is it? I mean, it's a little unusual, right? I mean, they're accustomed to the rain in this area, right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. But, you know, everybody's slugging down food as fast as they can for their journey south, you know?
I saw nuthatches today in my yard, which is so fun. I saw two of them together, which a lot of time you don't see them together as much.
I know this is the best time of year because the young ones are hanging with their parents still, learning and begging.
I love those nuthatches, the way they move vertically up and down trees, and they kind of move like woodpeckers or something almost. Yeah, I think they're really such cool birds.
Yeah, I don't know how you can go up and down trees with your head down.
I know. And but just seeing all the chickadees and juncos and all those birds. But one thing that's kind of interesting this time of year, right? Are they starting to get their winter colors?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And so that's one of the things I definitely wanted to bring up was because the fall migration is when they already do have their winter plumage, almost all of them. And so they don't look the same. And you're going, how could that possibly be the bird I saw in spring? It's not even got a tinge of green on it anywhere.
Right, right. And it's so confusing for a novice like myself who, you know, loves looking and observing, but I don't really, you know, usually know what I'm looking at very well. Mm-hmm. And then the way I do identify it is these very specific markings, but they can be completely different, especially like juveniles. Like, as you said, there's juveniles around right now, too.
Oh, lots. Yeah.
And then different times of year, different plumage.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the common birds out there right now in Juneau that you see that really kind of look different right now?
Well, for all the warblers, for example, because they're going to come back with all kinds of different interesting colors, especially the yellow rumped. And now you see a tinge of yellow on a young bird, that's really, really rare. So the things that you look for to identify aren't there.
So what does a young or what does a warbler look like? Just kind of brown or gray?
No, they actually get part of their adult plumage. So they have the dark and the white, but they don't have the other colors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And of course, famously ptarmigan and, you know.
Oh, my gosh.
Right? That's amazing.
The complete shed from summer camouflage to winter camouflage,
right? Incredible. Yeah. So we have these kind of stellar examples of that as mm-hmm. well. And then, well, speaking of stellar, though, like stellar jays, they don't really change, right?
No, they don't. It's really nice of a few birds like the juncos, our dark-eyed juncos, and the stellar jays. They you can tell who they are. Year round,
no disguises. Is there a reason for winter plumage? I mean, camouflage, I'm guessing, but is there other reasons?
Yeah, the main thing is when the juveniles have been really tremendously busy growing to full size and growing their first batch of feathers. That takes tons of energy and food. And so they really don't have time right now in the beginning of migration to molt again.
Hmm.
So during the winter, they'll be still growing. And the next spring, when everything's more plentiful to eat again, they'll be molting again.
Oh, yeah. Now, do their calls change depending on time of year? Or are there distinctive calls that are kind of different?
Yeah. For a lot of birds, the calls that they use to associate with each other, the more regular, just here I am kind of call, you don't get to hear the beautiful songs unless it happens to be one of our kind dippers or Pacific wrens that will sing for us in the winter, but nobody else.
Because the singing, when they're singing, a lot of that is to do with courtship and mating and all that stuff,
yes,
right?
Yes, and territorialism a lot,
oh,
too.
Oh, right. Yeah, sure. Boy, I hear that with my hummingbirds.
Oh, yes.
Man, are they feisty?
Yes, very
now,
much so.
Do they go through a couple of different broods in a year?
You know, not that I know of here in Juneau. In fact, when they come up in the early spring, they pretty much are really sometimes very dependent on the sapsuckers because the sapsuckers have made all those new holes, fresh sap. So if there's some lack in flowers, then the hummingbirds can go there. But then on the way down south, they go up in the mountains, so they do the alpine flowers. And you know the alpine doesn't stay beautiful flowers for long, so they got to scoot on out of here.
That's really, you told me that when we were talking last year about hummingbirds and their migration. It's so fascinating to know that they kind of follow ridges up and follow this alpine bloom mm-hmm. and then head out that way.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, fascinating. And unbelievable when you see them, mm-hmm. these tiny little dynamos, mm-hmm. how they're able to go all that distance. The hummingbird, you actually mentioned last time we talked about hummingbirds that there's some hummingbirds that actually overwinter here.
Yes. There's a few Annas that always come north for unknown reasons. And a lot of folks are willing to try and keep their hummingbird feeders unfrozen for them. It's a big dedicated thing to do because they aren't going to have much other food available of any sort.
They kind of go through stages of a little bit of dormancy, right?
Yes, or they do. Yeah. They can go into torpor, mm-hmm. and so they don't have to eat 24 yeah. hours a day.
Yeah, because otherwise, that's exactly right. But then, so there's Anna's and Rufus here, mm-hmm. essentially.
Yes.
How far is the migration for the Rufus? Where are they headed?
They're going to Mexico, and I wish I'd written it down, but if you do it by body length, it's over 47 million body lengths.
That's wild. Yeah, that's wild. Amazing. Well, yeah, that's incredible. So they're heading all the way down. I mean, at least that's got to be 4,000 miles anyway.
Yeah, very close.
Yeah, down to all the way down to Mexico. And then when do they head back up here? Is it kind of April-ish,
it is
right?
April.
Yeah,
right. I know I've looked at that before, and sometimes the first week of April, but I think they do delay a little bit when the weather's really cold. But I have seen them as early as April 9th, and our eBird says it's a little bit before
okay.
that some days.
Speaking of eBird, I know you have a call.
Oh, yeah.
Now, what's this, call?
We were going to talk about our birds that are migrating through.
Yeah.
And this is one of the ones that you would never recognize from spring to summer.
Okay.
And this is it's a interesting little call.
Oh, what?
That's a least sandpiper.
Oh, that's a sandpiper.
Yeah.
That makes sense. I guess you can kind of hear that sort of a thing when there's a whole bunch of them.
Yes. When there's a flock, they're really nice about chatting with each other and telling you where they are.
Right. Yeah. So what are some of the other birds? So sandpipers are coming through. What are some of the other birds coming through?
Actually, there's quite a few teal at the moment. We have very few that nest around here. They do, but I've seen a couple flocks of over, a couple dozen. And one of the ways that you would like to look for these birds in fall is on a rising tide, because the shorebirds want the shore, and a lot of the ducks are,
algae eaters, right?
Yes, yeah. They're right. greenery, and they're dipping. They don't dive. So if you want to find them, that might be the easiest way, is wait for a rising tide where there's a nice meadow, like at Eagle Beach.
What does a teal look like?
Well, in this time of year, it's brown.
Okay. Do they have the blue beak?
No.
Okay.
They do have a slight, nice eye stripe, uh-huh. kind of like Cleopatra stripe.
Yeah, stylish.
But you really can't see the green on their wings or anything. And the females and the juveniles and some of the males have already molted, so they all are brown.
is there
there's about a third of the size smaller than a mallard.
So. Okay. Yeah. Is there a way to distinguish them from other birds? Is there a shape to them or a shape to their beak or what?
We do have blue-winged and green-winged teals here, but it's this time of year, it's hard.
Yeah. It's just, if you see a little brown duck-looking thing, it might be a teal.
Yes.
Yeah. So teals and sandpipers.
They'll be passing through. We don't get to see the golden eagles much, even though there's one in town. They go on the interior.
There's one in town?
I know that if you want to go to the top of Mount Roberts, you might get to see it.
Yeah, and I've always heard over Sheep Creek is a place that you can see golden eagles sometimes.
Yeah, every once in a while.
Yeah, wow.
They don't. They like rabbits and squirrels and ground animals like that, not so much fish. So
I see.
There's not as much to attract.
Maybe marmots or something they're going for.
Yeah, maybe something like that.
Now, so how would you distinguish, especially from a juvenile bald eagle versus a golden eagle?
Well, the golden eagle has that great, huge golden crown. I'm kidding. They do have a really nice fringe of gold there and on their shoulders and back, but it's difficult.
Yeah.
It is difficult to tell them from a
They're a little stockier sort of, right?
Yes,
aren't they?
They are.
Little shorter wingspan and kind of like a little mm-hmm. stockier than even a juvenile bald eagle, mm-hmm. right?
And they certainly don't have any white on their heads or tails. So that's helpful.
Yeah, very cool. Okay. And then I saw a beautiful great blue heron yesterday mm-hmm. in the wetlands. It was gorgeous. So do they migrate through or are they
resident? They try to stay here. Uh-huh. It has to get really bad for them to move away. But sometimes if all the freshwater freezes, they'll go a little bit farther away from us, because they fish in freshwater and the saltwater shore. but not if it's all frozen.
Well, anything else you want to cover about what people are seeing right now?
One of the things I really wanted to add, though, on if you go to the eBird site or Cornell, you can get onto this place about migration of birds, and you can pick any species of bird you want anywhere in the world, and it'll show you where they are mostly. And then during migration months, they'll actually show you a moving video of how they are traveling. So like and especially this time of year, the big, huge flocks of robins and stuff, they'll cover up the radar.
Really?
With the movement. And sometimes 6 million at a time go down the east coast of North America.
Wow. Where are the robins here going? Do they migrate out? Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I'm not sure if they go into the interior or not. I really don't.
Yeah.
I don't know that.
That's really interesting. The robins are just around. But of course, the first robin of spring is something we all look for. And that is a bird that has just arrived.
Yeah. You can't expect a bird that likes to get food out of moist ground to stay here during
the
winter.
That's right. Boy, they love my lawn. Oh, yeah. My goodness. The worms are just tortured. It's incredible. They hang on with every last grasp, but then they get stretched out and pulled. It's amazing to watch the carnage from the robins in the yard. Well, Brenda, thanks so much for coming in, letting us know a little bit about the fall migration. You can go to juno-audubon-society.org to check out the stuff that's happening at the Juno Audubon Society. Do you have any walks or anything like that scheduled right now?
No, not right now, but we do have our first public presentation will be October 12th.
Okay, October. Well, we'll talk to you before but October 12th is coming up with the first public presentation. Brenda, thanks so much for coming in,
letting
us know a little bit about fall migration and other stuff happening here. And let's go ahead and just listen to a little bird note now. Brenda, thank you so much.
Thanks.
This is Bird Note. The mountains ranging from Mexico into southeastern Arizona are home to some delightful species of birds. Here's one, the Arizona woodpecker. Found in the Sierra Madre Occidental Mountain Range in Mexico, their habitats stretch north into smaller ranges like the Chiricahuas and Huachucas in the U.S. They share the mid-elevation pines and oaks with other border straddlers, like elegant trogons and blue-throated hummingbirds. Arizona woodpeckers are brown overall, with a white and brown cheek and heavily marked white underparts, unlike the black and white plumages typical of other North American woodpeckers. These small woodpeckers forage by flying to the base of a tree and then spiraling up the trunk. As a male carves out a nest cavity, he gives the female a progress report with a gliding flight display. In this quirky courtship behavior, the male turns himself into a paper airplane, holding his wings steady and gliding towards his mate. He taps on the nest tree to show off the excavation. It's an unusual use for a small bird's wings, but it helps Arizona woodpeckers garner the attention their newly carved homes deserve. For Bird Note, I'm Ariana Remmel.
Oh, let's talk about skating. Snoopy skating. I love that song so much. Welcome back to your community-supported public media station, KTOO. It's Juno Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein with you, and joining me now is Lauren Anderson. Lauren, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks, Andy.
Let's talk all things Treadwell Arena. So exciting. We've got an actual superstar coming to town.
We do.
I mean, an actual, honest-to-goodness, real, hugely important and famous and accomplished skater,
yeah.
Scott Hamilton.
Yeah, Juno, if you haven't heard, Scott Hamilton, the Olympian from the 1984, he was a gold medalist, Olympics. We are also going to be having two additional Olympians here, Keegan Messing, who is We like to call him a hometown favorite. He's right. from Girdwood, but skated for Canada and is a two-time Olympian. And then Paulina Edmonds will also be here, and she skated in the 2014 Olympics. She placed ninth, actually, at the Olympics. So we're really excited to celebrate something that we're doing new this year that's called Skate to Eliminate Cancer, and it's through the Scott Hamilton Cares Foundation. And Scott is a cancer survivor and created this foundation. And this is our first time doing this fundraiser, and we have a financial goal. And part of our celebration then is to celebrate with Scott, and we'll have a remembrance walk and a open skate and two skating shows where Scott will be there along with the Olympians and our local skaters, and youth hockey event and adult hockey events. And so there's something for everyone in the community, whether you are a skater or not. And
it's pretty cool. You know, I went on the website, the fundraise.scottcares.org/Juno is the fundraiser to go see our specific thing. There's already a lot of money that's been raised. It's kind of amazing. It looked like Southeast Oncology Center gave a really nice contribution as a kind of a seed money to get it going.
Yep, absolutely.
And then there's other people that are already contributing to it, which is really, really cool. And you can just see, like, worldwide how much good this project of his has done and how much it's raised both awareness and, you know, all that, but also, you know, money, really raised a lot of money.
Yes. And the money that we're raising goes toward cancer research, but 30% of it stays right here in Juneau with the Cancer Connection, specifically for their travel program. And so anyone that registers for any of the events will have a personal goal. And our goal is $25,000 here in Juneau. And then we all have a personal goal that you can set on your own. And all of those funds raised, even just the participation fee, go toward that total goal.
Yeah, cool.
So it's very exciting. And we've been working closely with the Cancer Connection, which has been a great opportunity. And I'm learning so much, and it's been a really great experience so far.
So he's going to actually, well, I guess it's like there's a weekend of events, and probably you guys might even come back in here and talk about that towards the end of September, right?
Yeah.
September 29th through the 1st. Mm-hmm. And will he be here for that part of it? Oh, that's really cool.
We're so excited. Yeah. He'll actually be here. This is a treat because he doesn't always have the time to go to all of the locations that are doing some of his fundraising. But he has been up, Eagle River has been doing the Skate to Eliminate fundraiser with Scott Cares for multiple years. And this is his first year going to Eagle River. And we're so fortunate to be able to kind of be part of his Alaska tour.
Yeah.
So he'll be up in Eagle River on September 29th, get on a plane on the 30th, and help us celebrate as well. So
that's
we're really looking forward to it. We really want people to be registering right now as we're leading up to our celebration.
Yeah, cool. All right, what else is happening in Treadwell? Treadwell's open.
We're open.
Yeah, right, yes. Which is so amazing and cool. And new roof.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, we are open even while we're finishing up a construction project, which is fantastic. We needed the roof. We had multiple leaks, so we're so fortunate that we have had this opportunity to.
Yeah, I've been following along on social media.
Oh, good.
The painting the ice, like laying the ice. That's so fascinating how that works. Can you explain? Do you know?
Sure.
Can you explain a little bit how? Like that sheet of ice that we just take for granted, you know, says Hecla and all that stuff on it and all this cool. Like, how does that happen?
Well, it's quite a process. It takes us about a week to 10 days. And there is a small team of us, rink staff and volunteers that actually put the ice in. And basically, we spray water down, not with a hose, with like a hand sprayer, basically. And we slowly begin layering water on top.
Mm-hmm.
And then we paint the ice white.
So that it's the ice itself that there's a small or thin layer of ice that gets painted.
Yes.
Not like a fabric or something underneath that we're seeing.
Correct.
Okay.
It's a powder that you mix with water, and that's what we use to paint the ice white. And we put it in this large hopper that we pull. That's full of water. It's quite heavy.
Yeah.
Because as you know, water is quite heavy.
Right.
And that sprays the white down, and we do multiple layers of that. And then we seal that in with just regular clear water. And then eventually we start painting, and you can paint the lines, which we have done over the years. And we do have some painted lines, but we also have this textile fabric that we purchase. It's just a kit. We are an NHL size rink, and so we have the NHL size kit. And we lay that material down, and we use a paint roller.
Like a roller, yeah, mm-hmm. Right. Just
and
to
then,
lay it flat, yeah.
Yep, so it lays flat, and we have backpack sprayers on, and we're spraying those to get them wet, and then we seal that in, and that's the same fabric that our logos are in, which is we are fortunate to have Hecla as our center logo and Kensington Core as our additional logo.
Yeah.
So we're really fortunate to have
and that
support.
And that just lays, that foundation is there all season.
It's there
basically.
All season.
Yeah.
And then we build up from there just water.
Right.
Because
Lots of layers. Right.
Because the Zamboni or the ice resurfacer has studded tires and to keep from
wandering around. Yeah,
yes. Right. And so it needs to be thick enough to put the machine on so that it doesn't pull up the white paint and all the hard work that we put in.
Well, it's really cool. And for anyone who wants to go check it out, like either you just type in Treadwell Arena into Facebook or something, but it's pretty awesome to see how it all works and all the work that goes into it too. You really just understand, because you just, as a layman, you just think, you just flood the thing. You know, you flood it, you freeze it, you're done. No big deal. It's like, no, it's a big deal.
Well, and we did a time lapse of a portion of the install.
Yeah, so, right. Yeah. That's what it was really cool to see that. Well, what else is happening at Treadwell? Or one thing I did want to mention that at Diamond Park tomorrow, it's a really fun event that happens every year. Trucks and Stuff is over at Diamond Park. So that's from 2 to 5, and that's for when kids get to crawl around on the trucks and all that stuff, right?
Yeah. We're celebrating a month of play with Parks and Recreation. So you get a passport and you can go to the various facilities, get your stamp and win tickets for Alaska Airlines and a variety of prizes. And there's still time. So Trucks and Stuff is tomorrow and we're really excited for that event. That is a favorite.
All right. Well, I just wanted to mention that one and make sure people knew about that. But then anything else happening at Treadwell we should know about?
Well, sure. You can come to Treadwell and get your passport stamped during any of our open skates or stick and puck or pond hockey that we have on our schedule. To find our schedule, I would encourage you to go to our website. You can just Google Treadwell Arena and find our daily schedule, or we have the schedule up through the month of September right now to find a time that works for you. We do have a bit of a limited schedule right now. If there's anyone out there looking for winter work, we are hiring a building custodian as well as front office staff. We are a really fun crew to work with. And the more staff we have, that will allow us to have a broader a variety of hours open. But right now we're a little bit
staff. And is hockey starting up soon and all that stuff? Are there opportunities for people maybe who've never played before or that kind of thing?
There are. So youth hockey is in their preseason right now, but they will have an intro to hockey coming. And the skating club has their learn to skate lessons. And adult hockey has they did 2 intro to hockeys, and their season will be starting up here, next week. And then if you are interested in learning more about skating, on September 16th, we are going to have Skating 101. And this is an opportunity. It's a free event for you to come and try. It's geared for beginner skaters, and we'll have...
Lauren, I'm sorry, but we're out of time.
We're out.
We are out of time, but that's happening. That's what's happening at Treadwell Arena. Thanks, everyone, for listening
Thank
to
you.
Juno Afternoon.